Okay, before we get going, I'm going to look at Isaiah and Ezekiel a little bit this morning. But I put these together last night, so if it doesn't come out just exactly right, that's the way it works. These deal with the minor prophets. There are 12 minor prophets, and there's some information here that hopefully will help you with your studies. When you get through, you don't need one. This deals with just a brief explanation of what they deal with. They're not stable. You're special. You're that. I didn't, in case somebody else is not here wants a copy. I didn't want to staple it together and have to take that out to make a copy if you want a copy. But otherwise, we got enough for everybody this morning. We're doing okay. But that will give you kind of a brief matter. The chronological order of it, it goes by date. So the scriptures are not always, the books are not always in chronological order. And so those are just suggested dates. There's two or three other researchers or whatever that they've given different dates that these prophets and kings of when they served and what they did. And so sometimes it's just it's a guessing game, or it's just associated with the kings of Syria or Babylon. When we know the Bible reveals more about Nebuchadnezzar than any other book, any historical book. The Bible has more information about him than any other. They found whoever they are. Steel, I think that's what they call those big round cylinders that they would put chisel in the history, you know. And they found steels like that. Hittites, the skeptics would say the Bible talks about the Hittites, and there's no reference historically for the Hittites until they found the steel. I think it was a Assyria that talks about the Hittites. So every time that every time. But when the skeptic comes up with something that Bible talks about, there's not a historical account, just a matter of time until something comes up that validates the biblical account. And so it's interesting how some of that has come to play. Anyway, these are the references to the minor prophets. You have 12 minor prophets. They're minor due to not the events, but due to the extent of the writing. They're not what, and they didn't know they were minor prophets. As opposed to that of Isaiah and Jeremiah, who had quite a lengthy record, and Ezekiel, Daniel, and what have you. So I thought that might be of a benefit to you in your studies. If you want, if they're not right, well, I missed you. How's that? So we'll do that. All right. I want to look in reference to the matter of the faith of the prophets. And we looked yesterday in reference to that of Samuel and his fortitude with what he did, and that with Elijah. We'll get to Elisha. All of these are oral prophets. But one of the things that we have dealt with Elijah, that after he took the place, so to speak, that when he filled the spot that Elijah had been in, it was interesting to note that as he goes from the Jordan, he had crossed the Jordan, and the events took place with Elijah. Elijah was taken up. Elisha now had the mantle, the hairy coat that Elijah wore, and had that. And once he got back on the other side of the Jordan, he was going toward Bethel. Now, Bethel was the southern border of Jeroboam's development. That's where the worship was. And he was going by Bethel. And it shows the attitude of the people of Bethel concerning the prophets of God, because as he's going by, there's a group of youth, of young individuals that were taunting him and saying, "Go up, bald head, go up," is what they would do. And there were two she-bears that came out of the woods and dealt with them handily, put it that way, you know. And so Elisha and Elijah, I mean, they dealt with a lot, and they endured a lot, but some of these guys, you just didn't want to bother, let them do their work. And some of them, when they would go to a city, the elders would say, you know, "What are you doing here? What's the problem? You know, what have we got going?" Anyway, so those oral prophets were there. I want to look at this morning in reference to the matter of Isaiah. Isaiah, we'll look at a couple of things in regard to him. We know in Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 14, where he speaks of the virgin birth. Now, when you deal with prophecies, one of them, when these prophecies are given, it has the people they're dealing with. It was not something that was insignificant to them. Okay? Something there. And then it had the long range fulfillment. So we know that this prophecy concerning the Messiah, the virgin birth of the Messiah, is not what they got out of this, of what the prophet had said. And so there's something about this that, for your studies, is identified that Jehovah spake unto Ahaz, saying, "Ask thee a sign of Jehovah thy God, ask it either in the depth or in the height above." Now we find that Ahaz, in reference to this, that Ahaz was the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. In verse 1 of chapter 7, we have Rezin was the king of Judah, and Pekah was the king of Israel. Rezin was the king of Syria. Pekah was the king of Israel. And he refers to Jerusalem, Remaliah, in reference to him. And so these are you can get a time frame in reference to that. It was told the house of David, saying, "Syria is confederate with Ephraim." And so Syria had joined up with Israel. So you'll have those statements that are made in regard to that. And his heart, that of the Judah, trembled, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the forest trembled with the wind. And so Syria was always a problem with them. Sometimes they would join up. One time they joined up with Judah. Judah paid them to go, and they did, against Israel. Here Israel, the northern kingdom, and Judah and Syria are joined up against Judah. And we find that Jehovah said unto Isaiah, "Go now and meet Ahaz, and thou and Shear-Jashub, who thy son." So this was the son of Isaiah, which meant that a remnant shall return. That's how that was interpreted. At the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller field, and say unto him, "Take heed and be quiet. Fear not, neither let thy heart be faint because of these two tales of smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin and Syria, and of the son of Remaliah," which was Pekah. And he said, "Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have proposed evil against thee, saying, Let us go up against Judah and vex it, and let us make a breach therein for us, and set up a king in the midst of it, even the son of Tabor. It shall not stand, neither shall it come to pass, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin, and within 65 years shall Ephraim be broken in pieces, so that it shall not be a people." And so the northern kingdom is about to go into Assyrian domination. Assyria is going to destroy the northern kingdom. And he said that it will be within this short period of time. For the heads, so we find they'll be broken within 65 years. So 65 years from then that Hosea, who will be the king of Israel at that time, will go into captivity. And so he said in verse 9, and the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Ramaliah's son. If ye will not believe, surely ye shall not be established. And Jehovah spake again unto Ahaz, saying, ask thee a sign of Jehovah thy God, ask it either in the depth or in the height above. And Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt Jehovah. And he said, hear ye now, O house of David. Is it a small thing for you to weary men, that ye will weary my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Butter and honey shall he eat, when he knoweth to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land whose two kings thou abhorrest shall be forsaken. Jehovah will bring upon thee and upon thy people and upon thy father's house days that have not come from the day of Ephraim departed from Judah, even the king of Syria. So the day that they departed from Judah was when Jeroboam had set up these idols, one in Bethel and one in Dan. What we have in Isaiah chapter 7, and that we find within the writing of Matthew, is a fulfillment of the virgin birth of Christ. But here is what it says: by the time that it takes for by the time it would take for a virgin to conceive, to bear the child, rear up the child to a point that child could choose between good and evil, that period of time, within that period of time, Samaria is going to be taken and Damascus, Syria is going to suffer as well. So that was the context under which this fell. Now we know that it is a prophecy because Matthew tells us. Here's what Isaiah said. And so it has the immediate, right? Has the immediate, and then it also has the long range with the fulfillment. And that's the way these prophecies work. It wasn't just a matter of making a statement to the people and you know, here's this, virgin's going to bear a child and that's going to happen, you know, several hundred years later. That wasn't the point here. But it was one that identifies the coming of the Messiah and the prophecy concerning that. So Isaiah wasn't specifically dealing with, at that time, for Ahaz wasn't dealing with the virgin birth of the Lord. But that's part of the prophecies. And that's why it's difficult when individuals will talk about, and I'm not against or a big deal with types and anti-types, but sometimes we happen to see more types than anti-types, you know, in the Bible than actually there. We know when the prophecy has been fulfilled because the Lord tells us. Here was the prophecy. How many of them would have come up with this event of a virgin bearing a child from that? Nobody. Okay. And so we have the fulfillment of those various prophecies that are given. And Isaiah set that forth. So he talked about the virgin birth, but it was a matter that in the context he was dealing with this battle that Judah has with Samaria, with the northern kingdom, and also that of Syria. And the Lord tells him, you don't worry about it. I mean, this had the king fearful, had the people fearful, that they were trembling like the trees of what are we going to do, because they're just a small patch. That's all Judah is. I mean, you look at the whole country from Beersheba all the way up to Dan, it's really not that much property compared to these other nations with what they had. And they were small people. And that's when Sennacherib, and we'll look at him in a moment, when Sennacherib comes down to Hezekiah and threatens Hezekiah, they're just a little patch. They've already Nebuchadnezzar had already defeated the Sennacherib, had already defeated these other nations, and that's what his messenger said. What makes you think you're going to stand? We've already defeated all these others, and you'll not stand against us. We'll see what Hezekiah did then. We also find that he dealt with the work of John the Baptizer in chapter 40, that he had identified this prophecy that would be given in verse 3, the voice of one that crieth, prepare ye in the wilderness the way of Jehovah, make level in the desert a highway for our God. And so he had identified that, and we understand that dealt with John, the work that he would be involved in. He said in verse 4, every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the uneven shall be made level, and the rough places a plain. And the glory of John of Jehovah shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it, for the mouth of Jehovah hath spoken it. And so these prophecies were given in reference to it. John's work was to do what? What?
Prepare for the Lord.
Prepare for the Lord. To make that preparation. It's going to be, they were, these individuals, they were looking for the Messiah. They were looking for it. That's why when John and the two disciples were walking, and he said that here, behold the Lamb of God to take away the sins of the world. That got their attention. They have been looking for this. John's baptism was a baptism unto the remission of sins. Well, Mark deals with that. And so when the people went out to be baptized in John, and John was one that was bold. We're not going to really deal with any of the New Testament prophets and have the list on that other sheet that was provided of New Testament prophets. Those are not all the prophets. You know. We know from the Ephesian letter the statement of where God is placed within the church, apostles and prophets and evangelists, pastors or shepherds and teachers that he has put in there. And you have Acts 13 of where there were prophets in the city of Antioch. And so there were prophets that were there, some that will probably never know this side of eternity in reference to it. But they had their work. The Lord dealt with them because he provided these prophets within the church until it reached its maturity. In order to do that. All right? So we have that with John the Baptizer. In chapter 9, verse 1 and 2, he also identifies the matter of the Messiah, of coming in and being a light unto the world. In chapter 9, Tina, you read that.
Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as was in for vexation. And at the first, he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun, the land of Nephilim, and actually the more grievously afflicted for by the way of the sea, beyond Jordan, Galilee, and the nations. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, on them hath the light shined.
All right, and so we have in Matthew chapter 4, verse 12, now when he heard that John was delivered up, he withdrew into Galilee, and leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, and then he deals with that prophecy. And so we have Isaiah that reveals that within his prophecy. Isaiah was a faithful, obedient servant. That's one of the things that we want to identify in reference to this, because he was one that he, in Isaiah chapter 20, this whole matter, Tartan was, it refers to it in the year that Tartan came unto Ashdod, when Sargon, the king of Assyria, sent him. And he fought against Ashdod and took it. Now this goes back to Tartan was in 2 Kings 18:17. Tartan was a general, was one of Sennacherib's generals. And it's very possible that Sargon was Sennacherib, or Sennacherib was Sargon. Some, you know, we've looked at these kings that had several names. And one of the most prominent that sticks in my mind is that of Jehoiachin, who was known as Jeconiah, who was also known as Coniah. And so they had different names. But we'll find when Sennacherib in 2 Kings 18:17, that what had happened was that Sennacherib had come to take Judah. Hezekiah was the king. And Hezekiah, they sent this letter and they're threatening him. They come and they speak to the people in their language. And of course, they're requested don't speak in a language where the people can understand you. Okay? And they said, no, they need to hear it. Said, Hezekiah, don't trust in Hezekiah. He's not going to be able to deliver you. And so Hezekiah took that letter and he went before the Lord and spread it out. Here's the problem that I have. In reference to that of Sennacherib. Now, if you follow where these places, Sennacherib, we think he'd come right down from the north, but he had to go around to the south of Judah and come back up the other side in order to get in there. So he had a number of battles going on at this particular time. But in chapter 20, he talks about Tartan when he came unto Ashdod, the way he's going to come, when Sargon, king of Assyria, sent him, and he fought against Ashdod and took it. At that time, Jehovah spake by Isaiah, the son of Amos, saying, go and loose the sackcloth from off thy loins, and put thy shoes off thy foot. And so we know that here was a matter of the sackcloth, a symbol of mourning, where, you know, with what's about to happen to Judah, or what has happened. And he did so, walking naked and barefoot. And Jehovah said, like as my servant Isaiah has walked naked and barefoot 3 years for a sign and a wonder concerning Egypt and concerning Ethiopia. And so we find Ethiopia is in the lower part of Africa. He said, so shall the king of Assyria lead away the captives of Egypt and the exiles of Ethiopia, young and old, naked and barefoot, and their buttocks uncovered, to the shame of Egypt. And they shall be dismayed and confounded because of Ethiopia, their expectation, and of Egypt their glory. And the inhabitants of this coastland shall say in that day, behold, such is our expectation, whether we fled for help to be delivered from the king of Assyria, we know, how shall we escape? And so this matter of what's going to happen when Assyria goes in there, Nebuchadnezzar later on, he'll go in against Pharaoh Hophra, and he'll deal with him in a just manner, I guess, you deal with him. So here was a matter of what I wanted to identify about Isaiah. That Isaiah was to go, but you recall that when David, the king of Moab had died, and David sent, now David had relatives from Moab, right? So he had a connection there, and who was the Moabites?
Descendants of Lot.
The Moabites that David was related to. Ruth. So when the king died, David sent men over to comfort his son. Well, he had advisors that were just like, almost like the advisors of Rehoboam. He's come over to spy out and see what you've got and to do that. And they cut off the skirts of the messengers and cut off their beard, after beard, whatever it was, and shamed them. And so David, when he found out about it, now we have a battle going on between, maybe it was a famine. Anyway, we find a battle is going to ensue as a result of what he did. If the king's son had just received what David sent, received that condolences, everything would have been fine. But the king was, the now king, the young man, was stirred up by those that... his counselors. And so the point is that they were shamed. Right? Well, what Isaiah is doing here says, you take your shoes off, because you're going to, well, It was an indication of subjection. That's another term. When they subdue a nation, subjugate, that they would subjugate them. And so this matter that they would walk barefoot, right, barefooted, buttock showing, it would show the shame, that the humiliation that they would be under, and that's what Isaiah is talking, and it's descriptive that Isaiah do this. See, so Isaiah did that. He walked barefooted, naked, not totally naked, but wouldn't be involved in that, but it was an emphasis upon the shame. And that was given against, here's what is going to happen in reference to that. And so it gives us a time period. You know, the Lord wasn't interested in time. This happened in, 1000 B.C. Common Era, whatever you do. The Lord didn't deal with time. And so we get involved in it and try to figure it out, and all of that's involved. So Isaiah is going to go ahead in chapter 21. He will deal with the judgments, the burden of Arabia, the burden in chapter 22. You have chapter 23 with Tyre. And so Isaiah dealt with these judgments that's going to come upon these nations and these people in regard to it. Now, in Ezekiel chapter 4, we have another example. One of the things we want to identify, we generally, a whiny people. Okay? And as Jeremiah had talked about the matter, when the folks would say, what is the burden of Jehovah? What's the burden? What have I got to do today in order to serve the Lord? And the Lord said, you don't ever say, what's the burden? And I'll hold you accountable when you do. And we see what some of these prophets, what they went through, as they were directed from the by the Lord as a sign and a symbol to the people about what was going to come up. And so we find in Ezekiel chapter 4 and verse 4, that's where we'll get, verse 1. Verse 1 through 8. Bob Gill? Ezekiel 4, 1 through 8.
Thou also, son of man, take thee a tile, and lay it before thee, and portray upon it a city, even Jerusalem. And lay siege against it, and build forts against it, and cast up a mound against it. Set camps also against it, and plant battering rams against it round about. And take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, and set thy face toward it, and it shall be besieged. And thou shalt lay siege against it. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel. Moreover, lie thou upon thy left side, and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it, according to the number of the days that thou shalt lie upon it. Thou shalt bear their iniquity. For I have appointed the years of their iniquity to be unto thee, and